Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's the Democrats' big night in Charlotte as President Obama prepares to address the delegates on the floor and the voters at home tonight. Initially, the Democratic National Committee planned its big event at the Bank of America Stadium for tonight, much as they did in Denver 4 years ago. But yesterday, party officials blamed the threat of severe weather for their decision to move the event back indoors. Regardless of venue, Barack Obama has a tall order to fill, much more so than 4 years ago. Here he is in 2008.
We cannot turn back. America, we cannot turn back. Not with so much work to be done. Not with so many children to educate and so many veterans to care for. Not with an economy to fix and cities to rebuild and farms to save. Not with so many families to protect and so many lives to mend. America, we cannot turn back.
So if he gave the same speech tonight, would it hold up? Tonight, the president must convince minority voters, white voters, women voters, middle class voters, undecided voters, and everybody else in between, and more. His is a work in progress and that the best is yet to come. Joining me now from Charlotte to talk about tonight's speech and what's happened so far at the convention in Charlotte is Joe Hallett, senior editor for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks, Joe, for joining us today.
My pleasure, Ian.
So give us a feel for the energy at the convention right now after last night.
It's high voltage. Last night was what we expected. Anytime you get President Clinton on the dais, he is going to fire up a crowd, particularly if that crowd is composed solely of Democrats. And he gave his typical stem winder. I mean, he did it in the fashion that only he can do. He makes difficult issues, concepts so simple. Mm-hmm. His oration is, you know, I mean, he's a remarkable character that way. And the crowd really responded. He made the case for Obama, the case that's been made all week here, that the president inherited a mess, and he has done the best he can with what he had. He can't be expected to turn everything around in 4 years. But jobs are coming back, the economy is getting better, and stay the course.
My guest is Joe Hallett, senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, how it's going and what's going to happen tonight. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So the venue's changed. It's been a little, you know, been an issue because the venue 4 years ago was so amazing in that gigantic stadium with, you know, 87,000 people. They wanted to try to replicate that this year. They can't because of the weather. The Republicans are saying, oh, it's because you just can't get enough people to show up. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I had doubts all week about whether this would ever take place in that big stadium. Primarily because I didn't think they could replicate what they did 4 years ago in Denver. We talked to Jim Messina yesterday, the campaign manager for Obama, and he assured us that they had given away enough tickets to more than fill the stadium and said it absolutely would have been filled. But the with the threat of thunderstorms all around the place, for tonight, and it is quite overcast here. It looks like it's going to rain any minute now. Mm-hmm. That they just couldn't risk the attendees' safety. But I think there were other things at play. As you remember, and when the president kicked off his campaign May 5th at OSU, at Schottenstein, the 20,000-seat arena had only about 14,000 participants, and part of the story became the vast swaths of empty seats. And there, I think there was concern that there could be some empty seats here that would not look good and would play into the whole enthusiasm gap the Republicans are trying to make. And the other thing is that there were reports that Tea Partiers and other potential disruptors were snapping up the tickets and it might not have been as friendly of a place for Obama. But it is a huge mess because TV stations, the campaign, and others already had poured millions of dollars into having the event at the stadium where the Panthers play, and now it's going indoors to the Time Warner Cable, where the rest of the week's events have been held. And I think it's probably better for the Obama campaign because that place is extremely loud and enthusiastic, and it will look and sound really good on TV tonight.
And on the other side of the coin is, if they did go forward with their plans to have the outdoor venue, regardless of who showed up, there could be a big thunder and lightning storm. And what would that look like? It's kind of like, who wants one during their wedding and who wants one during their acceptance speech for the nomination?
Exactly. And that's a point Messina made. He said that their first priority, the president's first priority, was to ensure that people were safe. And, of course, you know, if there was a thunderstorm and lightning all over the place and somebody got hurt, I mean, you know, that would be the story of the evening. And they just didn't want to risk that. The campaign said, I was talking to a couple of aides the other day, I said, well, you know, the other thing is that, okay, the president will be under some sort of a canopy or covered in. If it rains, the rest of the crowd's going to get soaked. How's that going to look? And they assured me that that was not the case, that the president was not going to be covered, that if it rained, he was going to get soaked along with everybody else. But, of course, again, that would have been a big part of the story. So I think it just made a lot of sense to them, particularly, you know, from the legitimate safety aspect, to move it indoors. And I might say, if I might add, and I think Charlotte, my first time here, it's really quite a nice city. The downtown is really, you know, close, walkable. There's a lot of things going on here. But I think from a political and practical point of view, this was a bad place to hold it. First of all, it's a right-to-work state and, you know, kind of kicked off on Labor Day. The imagery and, you know, that whole thing just doesn't play well. Secondly, this is traditionally a Republican state, as you know, and Obama won it by just 14,000 votes in 2008. It's the closest state of the union. And I think even the campaign almost concedes that they're not going to win it again this time, and it might have been a better choice to go to another, you know, battleground state like Virginia or Ohio or Iowa or somewhere like that.
You know, you brought up labor, the labor issues, right to work state, meaning no unions allowed. Right after the Labor Day weekend and so forth, there has been a tiff between labor, organized labor, and the party leadership, Democratic Party leadership. What's going on with that? I heard mention of that last night.
Well, labor is not pouring money into this convention like it has in past Democratic conventions. So, and a big part of it is because of where it's being held, because it's a right-to-work state. The labor leaders say that, well, you know, we're committed, of course, to the party and to Obama, but we need to save our resources for the campaign going forward. We don't want to, you know, squander it all here at a convention. I don't know. I mean, I certainly think that they back President Obama because of his record. I just think if they had a chance to rethink this, they would not be holding it here.
Omar in Westerville, you're on the air with Joe Hallett. Welcome to the show, Omar.
Oh, thank you so much. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I'm an independent, and, you know, Bill Clinton really last night made compare the country to someone that really walked away bad accident, and instead of dying on the scene, 4 years ago, the country was in a terrible shape and a lot worse than anyone thought about it. But President Obama got it going and getting it where it needs to be. But it's turned out to be a lot more problems, just like a patient, than we initially thought. So things are better off 4 years ago. I'm better off now than I was 4 years ago. I think Bill Clinton made my decision last night.
You know, Bill Clinton, he did make it clear. He did make that point that, you know, things, it's complicated, that he was given a very complicated mess.
I think Omar makes a very good point. And it's interesting. We'll see if President Obama tonight can be as good of advocate for himself as Bill Clinton was last night. I received an email from a reader last night who essentially said the same thing as Omar. He said, I'm independent. I wasn't sure which way to go. But after hearing Bill Clinton, I am absolutely convinced that I have to vote for Barack Obama. You know, he persuaded me that Obama has done the best he can with what he inherited. You know, he said he thinks that the stimulus, the $847 billion stimulus, was necessary, and that, you know, obviously the auto bailout seems to have panned out well. So as much as Obama can get Bill Clinton out there campaigning for him and in commercials, there's just no better surrogate for him.
Thank you, Omar, for your call. And thanks for listening, Omar, too. 614-292-8513, that's the number to call if you want to join the conversation. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. We'll probably continue to talk about Bill Clinton and his impact on it. We'll hear a little bit from Michelle Obama and a few others when we return with Joe Hallett of the Columbus Dispatch. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
For decades, government regulations drove innovation in the car business. Now, new rules call for an average of better than 50 miles a gallon by 2025. But automakers are already moving on to better batteries, to new and lighter materials, and many of their customers are ready, too. I'm Neil Cohn in the Changing Car Business. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. And 77 degrees with sunshine. Expect a high of 88 today. There is a chance of a late afternoon shower or thunderstorm. Partly cloudy tonight with still a chance of rain, a low of 63. Sunshine for Friday and another warm day with a high of 90. And then cooling off on Saturday. Expect showers early in the day and a high of just 72. Support for 89.7 comes from the Westminster Thurber Retirement Community, hosting an information meeting for its new active adult residence in downtown Columbus, Goodale Landing, Monday, September 17th at 2 p.m. More information at 228-8888. And All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. Still with us, Joe Hallett, senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch, talking to us from Charlotte. Joe, once again, thanks for joining us today.
Always a pleasure.
And joining us now in the studio, Herb Asher. He's professor emeritus of political science at Ohio State University. Thanks for joining us, Herb.
Good to be with you.
Let's turn to a little bit of local politics gone national. Ted Strickland spoke, of course, at the convention on Tuesday night, right, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah, he told you. Let's listen to what he's had to say.
If Mitt was Santa Claus, he would fire the reindeer and outsource the elves.
Okay, just a very, very tiny clip, but a very memorable moment with Ted Strickland, former Ohio governor, one-term governor, was kicked out of office by John Kasich a few years back. Joe, tell us about Ted Strickland and how he's doing at the convention this time.
Well, he's all over the place. I just saw him this morning at the Ohio delegation breakfast, and he's, like everybody else, running on fumes. He actually watched the Clinton speech from his hotel room last night because he said he was so tired, although there was some suspicion that he wanted to get out of the fray from that Israel-Jerusalem amendment that he offered on the floor yesterday. But there are a lot of folks, not just Ohio delegates, who think that he had the second best speech behind Mrs. Obama on Tuesday night. He really got the crowd roaring, particularly making the case against Mitt Romney you know, how the whole outsourcing and, you know, out-of-touch millionaire kind of thing. It was just red meat for the partisans, and they lapped it up.
Yeah, he can come across as sort of, calm. My 16-year-old said, "Wow, is that our former governor?"
Well,
hadn't heard him in that way before.
Yeah, and you know him well from covering him, mm-hmm. but you know he's in person just kind of low key, very nice, very polite, self-effacing. You know, that whole kind of Methodist minister persona that. You know, that he is a former Methodist minister anyway. He's ordained. You know, like a lot of folks here, he basically bellowed his speech, but you got to do that here to be heard. I think Liam and others probably did see him in a different light.
What do you make of Ted Strickland, Herb Asher?
Well, I think that one comment that we just heard that he made demonstrates how humor is probably more effective in most instances in getting across a very pointed and critical comment. And so that's been one of the most quoted lines we've seen from the convention. And nobody will criticize Strickland for being that negative because, in fact, it was a funny statement that made a point. And I think that's I thought we saw some of that last night with Bill Clinton in a softer tone. But again, last night's speech, just taking appropriate jabs at various points and everybody just sort of chuckling in awareness. Yes, he really just socked it to them, but not in a nasty way. And I thought one of the points that Clinton was making last night is that we don't have to hate each other to disagree with each other. And I thought something I think many Americans would respond to very positively.
I wanted to bring that up, and he even brought it into the – kind of made it a little more domestic, and that he pointed out, he goes, heck, he even hired Hillary.
Oh, yeah.
You know, made Hillary, of course, his Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton's wife, of course, who's not there because of her position in the government. But, Joe, what about that – there have been a lot of people that were talking, I thought, last night a lot about why can't we just get along? We want to work together. There's a lot of work to be done. Do you think that they made the case or not?
I think Clinton did for sure. I mean, I've been hearing that comment on the campaign trail for the last three presidential elections, I think ever since the 2000 overtime Florida recount, and I think that's why I got the email from the Reader and what we heard from Omar today.
The independents.
Yes, two independents who now have said Bill Clinton changed their minds, and I think that was part of the reason because he talked about what so many voters want. I mean, the vast majority of folks who are going to vote in this election are not on the far right, or the far left. They're in the middle. They want action on their problems, and they're just tired of this tit-for-tat bickering that win-the-day campaign that we see anymore with millions and millions and millions on TV just attacking inanely. And so I think that people on the convention floor, and these are the hardcore partisans, they responded to that well.
But what is it, that 6 or 7% swing vote, those independents out there, Herb Asher, that's critical to be reaching out to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would expect tonight that we would hear from the president similar themes to what President Clinton said last night. And remember, when Obama first ran for office, probably somewhat naively or optimistically or whatever, he talked about post-partisanship and talked about bringing people together. And I think there were many of us at the time who said, oh, he's assuming this is going to be far easier than it ever could be, because there are genuine differences between the parties. And so we have to separate two things, the policy differences, and then, as Joe was also saying, the style of politics. And so you have sharp partisan differences. And I think when people talk about polarization, I think more and more people who study this would say that the GOP has actually moved further to the right than the Democrats have moved to the left. It's, you know, when you say, oh, both parties are guilty of it, they're guilty of politics in Washington. But the polarization really represents some dramatic changes in stances that the GOP used to support. For example, immigration would be a very good issue here. But again, the parties have the right to differ. But the question I think that Joe is saying and others is, but do you have to, in fact, engage in such negative, nasty, you know, destroy the enemy, destroy your opponent or whatever.
Call him a commie.
Yeah. And I think here, and again, over the course of the years, we've seen that on both sides, and both sides have been guilty. But right now, I thought President Clinton last night really hit a note that, as you were saying, many of the independents would like. And I'd be surprised if President Obama doesn't hit that same note tonight.
Keith in Indiana, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Keith.
Thank you. I really watched the convention last night, and I think that Bill Clinton hit a home run on his speech. And he just has a way of mesmerizing you, and you get glued to his speech and keep on. And I think he'd make a fantastic professor. And Mrs. Obama, I didn't realize that they had come from that far below the middle class and worked their way all the way up, and it made you just they are part of us when they're that low on the totem pole and have worked their way that far up.
You know, let's hear from Michelle Obama. We have a cut from her and her very popular speech. Thank you, Keith.
He was still the guy who picked me up for our dates in a car that was so rusted out. I could actually see the pavement going by in a hole in the passenger side door. He was the guy whose proudest possession was a coffee table he found in a dumpster.
So, I thought so. Those are very interesting remarks from Michelle Obama. I mean, she got very nitty-gritty last night, the night before last.
Yeah. Well, I think it's trying, again, humanize the president. Remember, 4 years ago, one would not have described the president as having, or the candidate as having, an excess of empathy. For many people, he seemed aloof, very academic, and, you know, that's sometimes a bad word for people, but he was really a product of Cambridge and Hyde Park, and so what's been interesting this year is that and again, he now in the polls is ahead on the likability factor, and you can see in that whenever he talks about sports or goes to or has a beer with people watching a game, he's really doing what he's trying to link to what a lot of Americans really enjoy doing. Is it scripted in some ways? Of course it is. But it really is this notion that we do have a president who shares some of Bill Clinton's, Clinton was famous for empathy. You know, I feel your pain. I'm not sure Barack Obama will ever have that kind of standing along an empathy dimension. But right now, the key issue is he's running against Mitt Romney. So it really is, does he seem to better understand the problems facing, and, you know, the American people, and the polls seem to indicate that the president does a better job of relating to the average citizen. And that's clearly what Michelle Obama was trying to do that evening.
Well, and Tuesday night, it was like women's night at the convention. There were a cavalcade of well-known female speakers making the case that they almost don't have to make for Barack Obama because there is such a big gender gap. Joyce Beatty, the candidate for the 2nd Congressional District, was on the podium. The one thing I've seen at this convention is that they are going right at the issues that the Republicans have exploited, particularly Obamacare. We have seen speaker after speaker get up and tell very heartfelt personal stories about how the president's health care law helped them with family crises and so forth. Last night we heard a woman from Columbus talk about she had a condition which made it difficult for her to get pregnant, and she went to Planned Parenthood and talked about the very expert and gentle care she received there, which enabled her to have her little girl. We are hearing stories like that more and more, and so they're going right at that, at the issues that the Republicans have kind of exploited. And the other thing, just if I might go back to Bill Clinton for a minute, Obama has a problem with white males. Herb, I'm sure, sees that in all the polling. And Clinton is the kind of guy, the kind of surrogate, who can really help bridge that gap. I mean, I think we heard the caller from Indiana essentially say that. And I think Clinton also can help Obama present a good image on the business front. You know, we hear Mitt Romney talk about his experience as a businessman. Well, you know, Clinton balanced the budget. Clinton had 21 million new jobs during his administration. These are all things that people, you know, are concerned about, whether Obama has a business acumen to restore jobs to the economy, worry about. So Clinton, Bill Clinton helps bridge a number of gaps for Obama.
You know, the caller from Indiana, it was an interesting point. Another point he made was that, gosh, I didn't know that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama came from such humble beginnings. And I thought, wow, people are still getting to know them.
That's
after
right.
4 years. Herb, were you surprised at that a little bit?
Well, I think, again, you think back 4 years ago, and who was Barack Obama? He was a relatively junior United States senator who obviously won the nomination and the presidency. You knew about his educational background, but you never really and knew that he, in fact, had gone to great schools and was a wonderful student and an author and all of that. But I don't think you ever really got an inspirational figure and all that. But I don't think you really got a sense of really background, of youth, of family. And so I think there were a lot of things to be filled in. And I think, again, this year, recognizing that the opponent is Governor Romney and recognizing that, in fact, according to the polls, the president has an advantage over the governor in terms of likability, who better understands the problems of the middle class, well, then clearly they want to bring out more of that information to demonstrate that Barack Obama really is one of us or does understand our problems or whatever. So in part, it's being scripted, but in part, what they're giving us is actually his background. And you wonder why we didn't know that sooner.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, people are still getting to know him.
Well,
for lack of a better way to put it, no pun intended, there's hope in that. When people, there's still something to learn.
Oh, I think so. It's interesting. We are here. We've heard at both conventions how it's almost cliche for every speaker to get up and describe humble upbringing, humble roots, you know, brought up by their bootstraps, overcoming challenges. We especially have heard it here by the large number of Latino voters.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Jack Torrey, my colleague, had a story in the paper today about how that's kind of a different facet, that spilling your guts out about where you came from and how difficult it was for you and so forth. And, you know, for instance, Franklin Delano Roosevelt never told anybody he couldn't walk. A large swath of America did not know he was crippled and in a wheelchair. They just didn't talk about that stuff back then. But now it's worn on your sleeve.
Yeah, the Republicans did it too, though.
Sure. And I think Ann Romney did a wonderful job of talking about the crises and the challenges, and Mitt did also, in terms of that their family faced. And again, our culture today, when you look at daytime television and you look at evening reality shows, but particularly a lot of the talk shows and daytime shows, that's what it's about. People are actually spilling their guts. And so today we're much more comfortable in hearing stories that perhaps 30 years ago we'd have been kind of embarrassed, like, why don't you keep this private? We don't need to know all the details of your life or your family or the crises or the tragedies or whatever. And now I think we're a tremendous consumer of that kind of information.
You know, Joe, the classic question, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? It's another point that Bill Clinton made in no uncertain terms. Of course we're better off as a country than we were 4 years ago.
He did say that. In fact, he said, quote, "I know we're better off because President Obama made these decisions." And he was talking about bailing out the auto industry and the stimulus and health care and how, you know, another 500,000 jobs have been added because of his environmental policies and so forth. I mean, I don't know if people feel better off. I interview a lot of folks, and there's still a tremendous angst out there about the future. There's a lot of anxiety about economic security, you know, whether my job is safe, whether I am going to have health care, whether my pension is going to be there for me, and so forth. But statistically, particularly in Ohio, things appear to be getting better. And you know, here in Ohio, we've got Governor Kasich taking credit for it, and we also have President Obama taking credit for it. So, I mean, I compared to where we were, where we were on the edge of a depression, and where we are now, it's hard to argue that we aren't better off.
Yeah. I think Joe is right, but he's right on both points. But that the country certainly is better off today. We were plummeting toward a depression. Things were falling apart, so the country is in much better shape. But at the same time, there are many citizens who you would say they have not yet felt the benefit of the recovery. So I think for the president, one of the things he has to do is to repeat what Bill Clinton said and said, look, here's what we accomplished. We accomplished avoiding the disaster, the depression. But in fact, I acknowledge the recovery is slow. We're not where we want to. That, in fact, we really, you know, we've had job growths and, you know, for the last umpteen months, but we're not where we want to be. And I think in saying that, he has to acknowledge that many Americans still feel left behind. You know, it was interesting. I heard a comment on TV, and I didn't believe it, talking about the 1984 campaign and what the unemployment rate was in 1984. When President Reagan was reelected, and I said, "Oh, this can't be right," because all I remembered was it's morning again in America. Everything is fine. Those were some of the most beautiful commercials I've ever seen. They were so positive, so uplifting, and Reagan won in a giant landslide. And it turns out that the unemployment rate in Ohio in October of 1984 was 9.1%, and I'm thinking that's not morning again. But it goes back to Joe's point. It's what people do in terms of the comparisons they make and whether they feel they're better off and whether things are moving in the right direction. And I think that's one of the challenges that the president has for in tonight's speech, to convince people that, look, we headed off the depression. We did a lot of good things, but now we're on the right track. And I think that's the challenge he has.
And President Clinton drew a big applause line. Much of this convention has been focused on what President Obama began with, what he inherited. And President Clinton, as he usually does, put it just very succinctly. He said, quote, "No one could have fully repaired all the damage he found in just 4 years." And I think we'll hear some of that from Obama, that, I mean, he can't, he has mostly let surrogates blame the previous administration for the mess we're in. He'll have to refer to it, and then, you know, he'll remind folks of what he has done. And, of course, the most important thing for him to do tonight is to talk about the future and what he's going to do if he gets another term.
We'll get into more of that when we return with Herb Asher, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Ohio State University, and also Joe Hallett, Senior Editor at the Columbus Dispatch. He's talking to us from Charlotte, North Carolina, and the Democratic National Convention. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, life in an assisted living facility when you're decades younger than the average resident. We talk with Martin Bain. He moved into an assisted living facility 8 years ago in his mid-50s as a result of young onset Parkinson's disease. A former journalist and Zen monk, he now publishes a literary journal featuring writers in their 60s and older. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in just about 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to join our station, AWOSU-TV, for live coverage of the Democratic National Convention. Tonight, WOSU Public Media brings you the latest from NPR and PBS. It's special coverage live from Charlotte tonight at 8 on 89.7 NPR News, on WOSU-TV, and at WOSU.org/campaign2012. Sunshine today, a high of 88, a chance of a pop-up shower or thunderstorm late this afternoon. Clouds for tonight with a chance of rain and a low of 63. Support for 89.7 comes from the Midland Theater, presenting Ohio native singer-songwriter Lisa Bialas, weaving a tapestry of blues, roots, early jazz, and original music. Thursday, September 20th and Friday, September 21st, tickets at midlandtheater.org. And support comes from the Marburn Academy, a leader in college preparatory education for ADHD and dyslexic students, hosting the first in a series of community parent seminars. When Children Struggle with Reading, Is It Dyslexia? September 11th at 7 p.m. More at marburnacademy.org. And All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guests, Herb Asher, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Ohio State University, and also Joe Hallett's calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina. Joe's the senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch. Let's hear from Bill Clinton one more time. He was the star of the show last night, and then I want to continue our conversation a little bit and then maybe turn to Barack Obama a little bit more.
We simply cannot afford to give the reins of government to someone who will double down on trickle down.
The old trickle down issue, always the bane of the Democrats because they don't believe it. So once again, I think Herb and I were talking during the break about how detailed Bill Clinton was able to get last night without, was a 48-minute speech, without boring us to death. Joe Hallett, you were there. What was it like? And was it a long speech for you or not?
Well, I'm not a fair judge because I was so crazed writing on deadline.
Oh, okay.
That you kind of have one ear and one eye on the speaker.
Okay.
And so I finally wrapped it up. In fact, I had to have the story in at 11. And as you know, we get advanced texts of most of these speeches, but
right.
they come late. And so, he went on, I think, for another 17 minutes after 11. So I did get to just sit back and listen to it. And I mean, there's just no two ways about it. The guy is a delight to listen to. He's so conversational in the way he speaks, and just this down-home, wisdom that is almost mesmerizing. And I think that's how people in the arena felt.
Herb?
Yeah, I agree with Joe. That's the way it came across on TV, and that's an amazing speaker who can both speak to the live audience in the arena and speak to the national audience on television. It was an excellent speech. You know, thematically, one of the other things that I thought he did very well, and I assume it's going to come up tonight, and it's really a values question, and it's really the question of how do we succeed as a country? And, of course, Clinton was portraying the Republicans as saying that, we achieve on our own. We all can claim credit for our own success. It's very much individual. And, of course, that may not be a fair statement, but it was certainly, they say the Democrats believe we're all in this together. We all have to work together. And I think thematically, that's really an appeal that if President Obama makes that tonight, Americans would like to hear that. It goes back to Joe's earlier point about cooperation, but it's really that we all have responsibility to each other, that if we play by the rules, we should, in fact, achieve things that we just simply don't accomplish only on our own. And I thought when Clinton told that little story about every politician believes they were born in a log cabin, and then they claim credit for having built a log cabin.
Right.
I mean, it captured it perfectly. And so I think thematically that'll be another thing that'll be talked about tonight, or at least should be.
He made another point that I was wondering was a very subtle jab at the whole Ayn Rand connection to Paul.
Ryan.
Thank you. Paul Ryan, Democrat, obviously the Republican vice presidential candidate. He's, been quoted, and we've heard him, you can hear him talk about the philosopher Ayn Rand and Virtue of Selflessness philosophy. And he did say, we think the better philosophy is we do it together, not do it yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big part of Clinton's speech, is this whole we're all in it together rather than you're on your own, as they try to portray the Romney-Ryan convention to be all about. Clinton can carry out that message. That will be part of Obama's challenge tonight, because our politics has become even more polarized since he became president. Both sides are responsible for it. And, we, at the end of the year, have a massive budget problem that has to be handled, and that you would hope will require some sort of bipartisan cooperation. So I think we will hear the president make that kind of appeal. I don't know if he makes it with as much legitimacy as Bill Clinton did.
Chris in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you, Ann, for taking my call. I have 2 points. One is, I'm an independent voter, by the way. I voted for Reagan twice. But I guess my point, the first point would be, I noticed in the convention, the Democratic convention, that there was a lot of people were really in touch with the speakers. I mean, they were really emotionally involved. And I think what I noticed is that I really believe in my heart that, I think the truth was being told, and people were responding to what they felt in their heart was actually the truth. The second point is that I do believe I am better off than I was in 2008. I remember 2008. I was out of work, on unemployment, didn't know if I was going to be able to keep my house. I was able to work out an arrangement with Wells Fargo. through a loan modification successfully, countless calls, faxes, the whole nine yards. And my wife was able to go to work in a company here in Central Ohio, a healthcare company, where she has a good paying job. And I'm very proud of her because she had been out of work for almost 3 years. So I do believe that I am better off. I think we can do better. I'll be honest with you, I think the obstructionism has stopped us from moving forward in a better, in a faster pace. I think Obama, you know, has tried to do the best that he can. And that's kind of how I felt, you know, watching the convention.
Well, I might say that I've been to a number of these, and this is one of the best scripted conventions I've seen.
Republican or Democrat?
Yes. I mean, they have speaker after speaker has stayed on message. And at the same time, there was a sense going into this, and I think we captured it in some of the stories with interviews with delegates, that doggone it, we feel like, you know, we have been pummeled for the last 3 years talking about Democrats, and that the Republicans have controlled the message, and it's time, in the Democrats' way of thinking, that the truth be told. And one of the guys who articulated that so well was Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, I guess. And he said, quote, "It's time for Democrats to grow a backbone and stand up for what we believe." And the cheers were just resounding for that.
Yeah. Herb?
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's kind of odd. I think the Democrats actually over the past year did not do a very good job in making the case that the country is better off than it was 4 years ago. And, of course, that message got lost, maybe largely because all of the action from last December through March and April was on the Republican primary side. But, in fact, I think the Democrats have been silent, have not done a very good job of saying, look, we have a long way to go, but the country is better off, and we have created jobs. And in not saying that, I can understand why many Democratic delegates really felt that they had been, as you said, pummeled for the last year and more than that. And then beyond that, I thought Clinton did a very good job last night, just in terms of, you know, the caller made the point about obstructionism. And Clinton did a very good job in just citing, I don't know if he used the name, but of Senator Mitch McConnell, who made one of the more foolish public statements that a Senate minority leader should ever make by saying 2 years ago, our number one goal is to make sure Barack Obama doesn't get reelected. That's the essence of obstructionism. And I think the president and the Democrats will try to take advantage of that.
One tonal thing, in the Republican convention, we heard a lot of the question, are you better off? And the Democrats wanted to reframe that as, are we better off as a country? Not separating us.
Yeah. But again, the Democrats are doing that for very strategic reasons.
Absolutely. Because, and so are the Republicans doing
exactly,
it for their strategic
exactly,
reasons.
Exactly. Because, in fact, when you look, and I think Joe said this before, there are many Americans who still feel that the economic recovery has passed them by. But again, it's up to the Democrats to make the case then that we are better off as a country and we are on the right path so that everybody ultimately will enjoy the benefits of the recovery. And that's their challenge.
Chris, thanks for your call.
I have one other comment. I just really want the voters of Ohio to not forget what Kasich did with SB 5. I think we have a short memory, and I think, you know, he's trying to take credit for Ohio, you know, their unemployment being like 7% or what have you. You know, Kasich did a lot of damage when he came in, and I think he needs to be held to account for that.
Okay.
Well, you know, this convention really has had a bit of an Ohio tint. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of Ohioans on the program, and it seems like every other word is a reference to Ohio, and it just shows the importance. But last night there was Tuesday, a firefighter from Cincinnati on, and he said, you know, I'm a Republican. I was a Republican, died in the wall, not anymore. After Senate Bill 5, after the Republicans are trying to take away my collective bargaining rights, I'll never support them again. And we've heard other speeches along those lines, too.
Yeah. You know, last night, President Clinton had that call out to Ohio talking about the automotive rescue. And,
right.
And he said, Michigan and Ohio, and that's what this presidential campaign is about. It's about a certain number of states, and perhaps the automotive rescue doesn't mean very much in other parts of the country, but certainly the Democrats are trying to make it a major asset here in the Midwest, and especially in Ohio and Michigan.
Ohio, of course, is the big swing state, and I was wondering, we only have about a minute and a half or two left, if Ohio isn't a problem for Republicans. They seem to be really having a hard time resolving Ohio's success with the larger theme of are you a better off?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I've watched some of the arguments about the auto bailout and the Republicans saying, although there were workers in Dayton who didn't get taken care of appropriately and all of that. And I'm thinking, no, the auto industry in Ohio is alive and well. And if Democrats can't make that case, then shame on the Democrats. And it is the case, too, that, again, here it is, that Ohio is doing better than the national economy. That is so unusual. In past recessions, Ohio always lagged the national recovery. Well, the challenge for Democrats and President Obama is to actually now have Ohioans be thinking about how well Ohio is doing. But I think oftentimes when you ask people, you know, it's how the country's doing. But Ohio is doing better than the country, and both sides within the state of Ohio are claiming credit for it.
Well, just from a practical politics point of view, Obama did win Ohio by 4.6 percentage points. But Ohio is always a state that Republicans, have an advantage. It's a 2 to 3 point Republican advantage state. And it is going to be difficult, I think, for President Obama to duplicate the success he had in 2008. I'm not saying he won't win, but, he's first president since LBJ in 64 to carry Hamilton County. He cut into Republican margins in just about every Republican county, actually he did about what was expected in the Democratic counties. So he has a hurdle here. It mm-hmm. is still a Republican state for Republicans to lose, and I think it's really, really going to come down to the wire.
Well, I'm looking forward to listening to him tonight and maybe following up next week with some more chatter about that. Joe Hallett, thanks for joining us today.
Sure, Ann.
Joe Hallett, senior editor at the Columbus Dispatch. Also, Herb Asher, thanks for joining us today, Herb.
Good to be with you.
Herb is professor emeritus of political science at Ohio State University. NPR and PBS have live special coverage of the Democratic National Convention tonight at 8 p.m. on 89.7 NPR News and on WOSU-TV and at WOSU.org/campaign2012. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is 89.7 WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.